welcome to the Stoic Entrepreneur Podcast. My name is Tim Holloway, and I am the Stoic Entrepreneur. This is the go-to podcast for Stoic thought with a holistic mindset. Be prepared to be challenged to the core. How Stoic life coaching is different. What Stoic coaching is not. Number one is we are not their savior. Now, people often get into coaching because they are helpers. And that is that they're able to empathize and identify with the pain of another person. And so they are burden bearers. And that is they want to come alongside. They want to be of assistance. And they want to help. Now, this is all very positive attributes, right? But one thing that I want to really communicate is that most of the dysfunction that happens in our life is due to overuse of a strength. Most all weakness is the overuse of a strength. So that being said, if I'm loving and I'm helpful and I'm caring and I want to help people, I can begin to adopt this really saviorhood complex. And that is my role, to come along and save everybody and to help everybody, help people that don't even want to be helped, or to help people when they are not really willing to help themselves. Now, this is where codependency begins to set in. Now, it's detrimental to want to rescue another person because what happens is they begin to lose advocacy for themselves, right? And then they become excessively dependent upon you. And if they don't begin to rise up and do what they can do and should do, then that is going to steal their power and their efficacy, and they're not going to begin to rise up and to begin to take responsibility for their lives. Now, anybody who wants to help somebody would help with the talent, skills, and abilities to be successful and begin to identify where the talent, skills, and abilities are lacking, and that is that they don't currently have what it takes, and to begin to help them get the talent, skills, and abilities. And that is the idea that I'm going to be of service to help equip them if they are willing to do the process and to do the work themselves. Inside of this struggle to begin to change our lives and to find the tools necessary to be successful, we develop strength. It's much like the butterfly who is struggling to break out of the cocoon. Like, if they don't go through that process, they're not going to be able to fly when they are released. And so this codependent caring person would look at the struggle and say, I just want to help them. Okay. I just want to assist in the process. And if we took a little razor blade and we cut out the cocoon, and then the butterfly would emerge and not have the power and the strength to fly. That is the analogy that I really want set in stone. So when we do for others, we rob them of the grit, the strength, and the determination to begin to find change for themselves and to get the answers for themselves. Now, signs of saviorhood. Now, this is a detrimental form of saviorhood. That you only feel good when you are helping another person. Now, inside of this conversation is that helping another person does feel good, right? And it brings us, maybe a sense of purpose and fulfillment. Now, that is truth. Now, the overuse of a strength is I only find purpose and fulfillment through helping others, okay? And what that means is that I lose myself and my identity unless I'm being of service to somebody else. And the reality is that life is not all about being of service and helping other people, okay? And if I can only be peace, rest, and contentment of my soul when I am exerting effort for another person, then I'm going to be sadly discouraged and disappointed because life's process doesn't always allow for those things to take place. Sign of saviorhood number two is that I get excessively happy when doing something good for others. And that correlates to this elatedness and these pleasure responses and all of these different things that when I set that up as the pattern, then I can only experience that form of pleasure and elation when I'm doing sort of those sort of things. And that leads me to some dysfunction inside of my life. Number three is that I need to be needed. Now, if I set myself up as a savior of other people, then I am taking on a role that is very dysfunctional inside of their lives. And then I set it up to actually meet my needs, okay? And that I need this to feel good. I need this for the pleasure responses to begin to go inside of my brain. And I need to be needed. Therefore, all of this becomes very grotesque because now all of a sudden, I'm operating for a very selfish motivation and I'm not really doing what I'm doing for another person. I'm actually doing it for myself. I need to be needed, okay? This is some detrimental things inside of codependency. Number four, I only find purpose in helping others and coming to save the day. Now, this is the Messiah complex, white knight syndrome. I put on my white coat and I come to save the day. We're going to talk about that a little bit more in a little bit. Thinking it's my responsibility to rescue somebody. Or if they don't get rescued, then I take on excessive responsibility and say, well, I should have done this and I should have said that. And all of this is the dysfunctionalness of this codependent thinking. Drawn to people with a lot of problems and a lot of difficulties, okay? If you got the Messiah complex, then you are going to constantly surround yourself with people that need to be rescued. And that is that you are going to have relationships with people that have a lot of problems because they fulfill the need that you have inside of your life to take on this role, okay? And becoming a martyr in sacrificing too much for others. What is a savior? A savior is a martyr, right? We know about the narrative of the savior who came to save a man from their sins. We know the narrative. And so that is attached to martyrhood, okay? And we think that we're supposed to be another savior, okay? And that we're supposed to begin to be a martyr, and then that means sacrificing our health for other people, sacrificing our mindset, sacrificing our business and all of these different things. And what it all boils down to is that we are going to become empty and frustrated sacrificing ourselves for someone else when they should be making those sacrifices for their own life, okay? And lastly is taking on the role of a fixer when you have a lot of fixing for yourself to do, okay? This is kind of like the plumber, for example, who has leaky pipes, okay? We're out fixing everybody else's pipes and we never come home and fix our own, okay? And there's something definitely wrong with that mindset because what it does is that we go around, you know, fixing everybody else, filling everybody else's cup, and then realize that what gets neglected? My own home. This happens a lot for people who are like gurus. They help other people in their relationships, and they're going around just trying to save the world and save everybody's relationships, and then they come to the conclusion that there's no intimacy at home, and there's no connection, and I haven't really been practicing the principles for my own life. Now all of a sudden, I'm the one who's getting a divorce.
Are you looking to start a podcast? Check out Podcast Powertrain. We help alpha entrepreneurs establish dominant brands by building top-rated podcasts in 14 days or less. Check out podcastpowertrain.com.
Okay, you see how this works. Number two is being a guru. We're not the person who has all of the answers. And we are there to help them discover all the answers. We are not Google. We are not God. We are not any form of those things. So what that means is that they have the answers. And we are there to help them discover the answers in a form of coming alongside them. Not giving, but helping them discover. Now, the relationship turns detrimental when we excessively become the go-to source for everything.
And what that is we are setting and establishing ourselves as the guru for their life when they should be their own guru. Okay? They should be their own life leader. We're not their life leader. Now, we often don't intentionally try to become someone's life leader, but it can happen if this process is left unchecked and if we don't understand our role inside of the relationship. Now, the best way to avoid all of this scenario is to begin to practice the principles that you're talking about and get thoroughly established inside of who you are and your identity and your self-worth, so you don't go around needing to be someone's guru or life leader, okay? You don't find a sense of validation or completeness from operating inside of that role, okay? Signs of this guruism. I'm going to go through these kind of quickly, but I think they know everything. When you set yourself up as a life leader, as the guru, then you're the one who has all the answers, okay? And what that communicates to your client is they don't have all the answers. And so that steals their efficacy, and now all of a sudden you become crippling and dependent, and now you are their source. You don't want to become somebody's source, okay? Have all the answers. Overly involved in people's lives. When you must give advice on everything, then you have set yourself up as their guru, okay? And they feel immobilized unless they get your opinion. And this leads to all kinds of sick authoritarianism and cultism and all of this stuff. Behind every controlling cult, you will see this kind of guruism and white knight syndrome and all these different things manifested inside of those relationships. Find validation in fixing other people's messes. Use fear and intimidation to motivate people to action. Make big decisions for other people. Organize other people's lives around theirs, that their lives needs to kind of center around you because you're you're the guru. You dominate the relationship by excessively talking or avoiding listening. And then, of course, they're not open to feedback and are unchangeable. So all these signs are clear indication that there's this guruism taking place. You don't want it to begin to manifest inside of your life. And you don't want, you can begin to recognize it and see it if there is this force trying to operate as life leader and guru inside of your client's life, okay? Number three, Stoic life coaching is not being a dump site for all of their garbage. Now, inside of like common therapy, there is a mindset of sharing all your problems and releasing all of your burdens and all of these different things. There might be times and occasions where something like this would take place inside of a coaching thing, and it might be beneficial maybe for self-awareness and bringing those sort of things. But the process of continually rehashing old wounds doesn't bring the healing that we are looking for. Basking in the pain and rehearsing it only leads us to reliving it. You know, I think that the modern PTSD, now this is not a medical conclusion, this is my personal opinion, that the modern PTSD scenario that causes people to dive into their past and relive the trauma, they relive it in a fashion that grows and expands. And each time we relive it, we add feelings and emotions to it, and we have a new experience, okay? And what begins to happen when we begin to focus on the problem, that problem begins to grow and expand. And as we relive these and nurse them and rehearse them, then these things get bigger and bigger inside of our life, and it actually causes us to relive these experiences even more. So that being said, rehashing all of these things and bringing them to the surface and reliving them and processing them, in my view, is in my personal opinion, as a coach, we obviously don't go there because it's not within our realm. but we don't go there also because our focus is on the future and creating positive habits that are going to bring them success inside of their life. Now, does a person need to process all of their junk to begin to change their habits and begin to walk in some sort of fulfillment? That's absolutely not, because the reality is that we'll never process all of our junk, okay? And so that shouldn't hinder us from moving forward inside of our lives. So becoming a dump site is that you have decided that you're going to take on that role and that you are going to begin to carry all the weight and the pressure of your client. And inside of this, boundaries get skewed and their problems become your problems. Now, all of a sudden after the session, you're excessively thinking about it and you're concerned about their problems and the situations that they're facing, when in fact we need to establish our boundaries, and that is their problems are their problems and we are there as a coach to assist them and breaking through their boundaries and limitations, but they are not our boundaries and limitations. And what that means is that their stress is their stress, and that I am not going to take on other people's problems. Now, signs of this excessive, like burden-bearing sort of scenario is that you like the juicy stuff, man, right? And that you enjoy hearing about the problems of other people, and that is really a clear sign that that you're into that story, that narrative, and that juicy birdie bearing scenario. Get excited when you start hearing all the juicy details. You experience stress and anxiety from carrying the weight of the world on your shoulders. Now, we're there as a Stoic life coach to help identify the weights, because if people are not mobile, and that is they're not moving, they're not making progress, they're kind of stuck, that can happen for multiple different reasons, but the number one reason is because of the weight. It's hard to move when you have all this weight, okay? And so as a Stoic life coach, we're to help them to identify their weight. These are the things that they're carrying, and this is how they can begin to set them down. This is how they can begin to lighten their load and begin to make a forward progress. Now, that being said, if we have the weight of the world on our shoulders, then we're not going to be able to function very well inside of the relationship, because we're going to have too much problems and situations of our own that we're not going to really be of service to another person. Next is other people's problems become theirs. Becoming frustrated with your life with no reason at all. Consistently think you need to do more to help another person. Begin to take responsibility for other people's actions. Begin to have excessive anxiety about what could take place in somebody else's life. Now, the detrimental part of this is that their problems become our problems. But what really begins to happen is we begin to get more anxiety and more stress and more responsibility than the client actually does. And so the responsibility for carrying things out should be upon their shoulders and not ours, okay? Number four is being a validator of victimhood. Now, we're not there to nurse and rehearse the pain. Nursing the pain is providing a source of the pain to grow. What do you think of when you think of nursing? Nursing is the nutrition for the baby to grow. So when we come alongside somebody and nurse the pain, what we're doing is giving the focus and the energy to begin to grow and expand. And what does it do? The dysfunction grows and expands whenever a nurse is present, okay? And rehearsing the pain is being a sounding board for them to constantly rehearse the pain over and over again. Now, this often happens without being challenged. And that is not the role of a Stoic life coach, because our main role is to challenge. We are the challenger, okay? Challenge activities, challenge belief systems, challenge environments, challenge paradigms, mindsets, and all of these things, right? We are to take the role as challenger. Now, we never remember events as they were. We only remember how they made us feel. And when we begin to rehearse and experience the pain over and over, what we do is we attach more significance to the pain. And whatever we focus on and pay attention to magnifies and gets bigger. That is, energy flows where our attention goes. Okay. And if our attention is magnified on the problem, then the energy comes to that problem and we begin to focus on that. It begins to be magnified and it begins to expand inside of life. Now, victimhood looks like this, like we're pointing the finger at someone else to begin to evade responsibility. We're failing to correlate decisions to consequences, okay? My decisions get me these kind of results. My actions, for every cause, there is an equal opposite reaction. And so seed behaviors and fruit manifest. Now, victimhood just denies that whole correlation and begins to say that the detrimental things that are happening inside of their life is everybody else's fault. Okay, it's my mama and daddy's fault, it's society's fault, it's my church's fault, it's everybody else's fault. And that way I can begin to avoid responsibility and not take the actions necessary to begin to change my life. Number three sign of victimhood is that you feel like the world is out to get you. This once again takes on the identity of an ant in a world of giants, okay? That I am in a world and it is a scary place. Everybody is bigger and badder than me and they are giants and I'm an ant, okay? And the world is out to get me and everybody's stepping on me and crushing me and all these different things, right? That is because we have the mindset and the paradigm of being small, insignificant, and not powerful in any way or fashion. Number four is like you don't feel like you have the power to change the problems. Now, anytime we sense any of these signs that we went through or that are going through inside of this week, then we begin to challenge those because we begin to perceive that some of these things are taking place. For example, if you feel like your client is pointing the finger and evading responsibility, you begin to ask a question that begins to call that out. Like, do you think with that mindset and that belief system that you are trying to evade a sense of responsibility? Yes or no? Like, whose responsibility is it inside of this situation to begin to change? And questions that bring us around. So when you see these signs, you know which way to go with the questioning. So, next one is that you feel like your problems are unique in some special way. Now, everybody feels like inside of this victimhood is that they're the only one, okay? And that nobody on God's green earth is going through what they have gone through. And if you've only known what they have went through, then you would cut them some slack and give them and allow them to evade responsibility and that you would accept their excuses as valid and give them, you know, the okay to opt out in life is basically what we're talking about here. So our challenges, they may be challenges, man. I've had some challenges, my goodness, okay? And I've had some severe obstacles. But what I know and understand is that these challenges and obstacles have been experienced by multiple different men, okay? And my experience is not that unique inside of that. And so really breaking down that the pain is not that unique and understand that there are multiple people out there that have experienced the same thing. Now, this is where I think support groups are highly beneficial because you know and understand that everybody inside of the circle has the same stories, okay? And has the same situations. So our problems are not that unique. The next one is using substances to cope and to withdraw from life. This is a definite sign of victimhood. Making problems much bigger than they are. And lastly, believe that you're always targeted by someone, that you constantly feel like you are the minority, if you will, and the majority is out to crush you, okay? When that's not the reality at all. Number five. Stoic life coaching is not dredging up sufferings which are over. Now, Seneca said this, don't stumble over something behind you. Now we need to focus on the present and the current moment. And doing so will help us grow and expand. Same is true with your client. When we can bring them out of the past and bring them into the present moment, because that's all we have, is this time right now, this current moment. And to help them be here now, be present and in this moment, and make decisions today that is going to win the day. Now, the only thing that I could do today is begin to look at my habits and my routines and begin to focus on what it looks like for me to win today. And if I begin to focus on that and I begin to do the activities that I know are going to bring me the peace, rest, and contentment of my soul, then I win today. If by chance I don't do those activities and behaviors, I look back at the end of the day and I say to myself, today I was distracted, today I wasn't willing to do what is required, and tomorrow is going to be a better day. Now, as a Stoic life coach, we can help begin to frame some of these things, like if they go into past narratives and stories, we can help them challenge their beliefs and we can reframe them, which we're going to teach you reframing in a later course. And being that, hearing the story and reframing it and giving them a different perspective and then how to move forward is definitely key to any growth or change. But hearing the story and the narrative repeatedly without questioning and without challenging is going to lead to a lot of dysfunction. Okay. Signs of being stuck in the past. Your client is always talking about past events, past scenarios, and different past situations inside of their lives. Okay. Number two, they think that their good days are behind them. The good old days syndrome, the glory days. Like, I remember when, and it seemed like to be the height of their life, when they had this job, they were making this amount of money, and they had this house, and things were going well, and now they're not currently in that situation. So they look back in some glory days and say, you know what, those days are behind me now, and this causes them to really lose hope. So recognizing that is taking place inside your client life, super important. Number three is that they're holding on to hurts and pains. Now, there's no doubt that conditioning helps shapes our behavior. We are much like a computer and that we are governed by input. And that is that a lot of data has been inputted. Now, not recognizing that input and not processing data and holding on to all of that pain and all of that hurt is going to begin to affect our life. And so, you know, if you notice resentment, discouragement, unforgiveness, that doesn't mean that we don't talk about it. But what we do is as we begin to, we reframe it, we begin to identify that they are the victor in this challenge and this situation, and that they can overcome it, any obstacle that comes their way, like encourage in the form of confidence and power and efficacy. And they begin to make the steps forward to get out of that situation. Okay. Next is excessive anger towards people. You're always snapping in anger. This is definitely a sign of resentment and unforgiveness, and having regrets that cause you to suffer today. What Stoic Life Coaching does not do, number six, is focusing on a diagnosis. Now, we leave the diagnoses to the professional. Instead, we focus on goals and objectives. Now, we have to all understand that we are all human and that we are having this human experience. And what that means is that we are all subject to frailty, dysfunction, and problems. And what that means is that we must not thoroughly accept these labels that have been put upon us. Now, labels are just this human experience way to kind of identify maybe signs and symptoms and things that are taking place. But what begins to happen is that we accept this detrimental label, hook, line, and sinker, and we don't challenge any of the thing. And this label becomes a permanent attachment to our lives. And then we begin to define our lives based upon this label. Okay, instead of focusing on goals and objectives for our lives, so we begin to focus on the label that is placed upon our lives. Okay, now Stoic life coaching is all about begin to controlling the things that you can. Okay, now inside of having a label, a diagnosis, or things that are taking place inside of life, that is that there are some things that are happening to us that are beyond our control. Now, helping your client identify the things that are outside of their control so they can begin to release that. And then come over to, okay, so whose responsibility it is to manage symptoms and to do the best things that you can possibly do inside of your scenario to begin to live in a more comfortable fashion and begin to live in more fulfillment. That's their responsibility. For example, if they have a medication, like they can't really control maybe the situation that got them to the medication, but they can control whether or not they take it, okay? And they can control whether or not they participate in therapy and all of these different things. So understanding this, that even inside of a diagnosis, if we decide to take that client on, even inside of that situation, there are multiple things that are inside of their responsibility. Now helping them take responsibility for those things and begin to make steps inside of those things is super important. So, possible dangers of focusing on a diagnosis. Now, this focuses more on the problem than the treatment. Now, I don't know if the mental health community and all of these things intend to, with the diagnosis, maybe they intend to bring more self-discovery and revelation. But what often begins to happen is now I begin to focus excessively on the problem inside of my life. And not only that, but then I thoroughly attach myself to it that there's no me apart from my diagnosis. I am my PTSD. I am my fibromyalgia. I am this, that, and the other thing. And that's when it begins to take on an identity label that begins to affect our life in a very detrimental way. So it focuses more on the label than the actual experience. Now, there are people that have gone into remission and or their symptoms have subsided, and they still thoroughly identify with the label, and they still use it as a form to opt out on certain situations inside of their life. Number three is they use a diagnosis to opt out or to make excuses. I can't do that because, okay? When it might be just a little more effort needs to come into play. And understanding that, yeah, they have a mountain and they have a challenge. But that mountain is not unscalable. And that with more effort than the common person, because the common person doesn't have that diagnosis, they can begin to scale that and not to allow it to limit them in the same way. So, embrace all the stigma that the diagnosis entails. That is, after you get a diagnosis, you begin to research all the signs and the symptoms and all the limitations. And even those you don't have them, you begin to embrace them. Okay. This is not a very good thing. The next one is communicate this to the wrong people and experience a lot of fallout because of it. Now, there's some people that they can't handle our diagnoses, okay? Or if they heard that we have a diagnosis, then it would cause some situations to begin to happen inside of our life. So this is another very detrimental reason to not thoroughly begin to embrace everything that the diagnosis entails and to begin to thoroughly embrace communicating that diagnosis to the world. Not everybody's safe, obviously. Feel like it damages your own credibility or self-worth. Now, there's a lot of people that once they begin to get this label, this really attacks maybe their sense of credibility, right? And so all of a sudden, they're like, because I have this diagnosis now, now I'm not this anymore. So that's a very dangerous thing. The last two, the label can become an identity. I've already talked about that. And the label can give you permission for detrimental behaviors or give you permission not to show up inside of your life, okay? Number seven is focusing on the many reasons why. Stoic life coaching is not that. Now, we need to focus more on what than why as a Stoic life coach, okay? We often think that if we can understand why we do something, we can fix the problem. But the reality is that diving deep might give us a little bit of clarity, but ultimately it doesn't change the situation. Okay. Creating a plan of action changes situations. Okay. And so really understanding that half the time we don't really know why we do what we do. Now the professionals come in and they have an outside perspective and they might know sometimes why we do what we do. But even that situation is based upon assumptions and judgments. And the reality is that another person doesn't even really know why we do what we do. So Stoic life coaching is about focusing on the facts of life, not making judgments, not making assumptions. So that totally leads us into another realm, okay? But the facts. And if we focus on what is taking place inside of a person's life, validating what they really want inside of their life and helping them get action steps, then we're focusing more on solutions than problems. Now, here's what I know about problems. Is that they can get us inside of these detrimental things, and they can get us to start the problem process inside of these detrimental habits. They could be the triggering source that got us in there. But another source can actually lead us out, and that is recognizing the pattern and what we're doing, recognizing that it's not bringing us to the success that we want, and looking to how can I get out of this circle of dysfunction and make another choice that is going to lead me into a different direction. Now, just because a huge why might have set the pattern doesn't mean we have to actually know what it is all the time to get out of the pattern, okay? We do need awareness that it's taking place and the decisions that are going to get us outside of the pattern. And that's where Stoic life coaching begins to thrive. So, what are the dangers of focusing on the many reasons why? Now, we come up with false reasons why. Now, we do this in the form of fake repressed memories, or because we experience something again, we begin to attach more significance to it and we make it bigger and way more extensive than it really was. And this could be like very, very detrimental inside of somebody's life. Number two is disconnect from normal people by implying they're dysfunctional. Here's what I know. I'm dysfunctional. You're dysfunctional. Everybody's dysfunctional. Okay. And that is there are areas of our life where we are not functioning. Okay. There are areas of our life where we are not functioning to the capacity that we want. Okay. And what that means is that you haven't reached your full potential. I haven't reached my full potential. And everybody has some form of dysfunction in some way or another. Okay. So if I begin to focus on the many reasons why, and I go into traumatic experience and the conditioning that everybody has conditioned me, and I go into the victim narrative, now all of a sudden I'm going to disconnect from people. Because they are dysfunctional. Well, news brief, you're dysfunctional, I'm dysfunctional, okay? And so disconnecting from normal people who are not really that highly dysfunctional is what this diving deep into all the reasons why, right? And this happens, your mother or your father parented the best that they could. All parents fail in some way or fashion. All parents mess up their kids in some way. We are having a human experience, and that's just the reality of it. Now, to come to the conclusion in adulthood that your parents might have messed you up, might be important to have a conversation about it. But if you go into because that they have messed me up 25, 30 years ago, they are totally dysfunctional and they must be avoided at all costs. This is the mentality of this over-therapy generation. Number three. Picking up many more detrimental beliefs, okay? So as we nurse and rehearse these patterns and behaviors and these situations, we pick up even more of the narrative, and it's usually a victim narrative, that this is what everybody done to me, and I'm powerless to create any change in my life. And it just reaffirms those that victimhood. Next is thinking that talking solves all your problems. This happens a lot in this excessive talk therapy generation. Now, I'm not saying that it's not important or can't be beneficial for some people. Check the stats on that. Some of it's not very well, okay? Talking doesn't solve your problems. Identifying situations and solutions and taking action, that solves your problems, okay? But talking doesn't solve your problem. Now, it can initiate some behavior change, which that's what we inclined to do inside of Stoic Life Coaching, to talk in a way that brings identification and it brings solutions and it brings action steps and it brings accountability. It brings creating the environment for success and it brings all those things so we can begin to actually experience real change. Finding someone to blame. This is the key cornerstone of the over-therapied Y generation, going in so I can go in, I can blame society, so I can stick it to the man. There is a problem with this system and I'm just going to stick it to the man because I've been a victim of society, of the system, of religion. People think that I can point my finger at the church and they're the reasons why, or I can point the finger at my mama and my daddy and all these different things, my political politicians, my society, my neighborhood, all these things. And that's what comes from discovering the reason why. The reason why, I would just want to put it out there. You are human and have an inherent human experience. Therefore, you are subject to frailty, and that you may have had conditioning and input, but it's your responsibility to begin to understand what that is and begin to solidify the beliefs that you actually want to believe that are going to get you the results that you want. And all of that is excessive responsibility. Number 8, Stoic Life Coaching is not about blame. It's about responsibility. Now, when we dive into the depths of why, we get a lot of reasons. But it usually comes down to detrimental, limiting beliefs and conditioning. And it comes from people who have raised us, right? And so this gives thoroughly someone to blame. And it comes in the form of our parents. And once we begin to accept that modality of thinking, we will always find someone to blame. Because that is the way that our brains have been wired inside of that situation. So this leads to a lot of lack of responsibility. It leads to a lack of, it leads to taking excuses and all of these different things. Now, Stoic Life Coaching is the ultimate form of responsibility. I am responsible to control the things that are within my power. Now, you may have experienced traumatic events. Your client may have experienced traumatic events, something bad in childhood that led to a lot of detrimental beliefs. But when it comes down to it, it's my responsibility to heal. It is their responsibility to heal. Communicating that responsibility and help them take the steps towards healing is what is going to bring them the change that they want. It's also our responsibility to recognize our own triggers and to begin to practice a form of awareness so we can begin to recognize the behavior that is inside of our lives that is bringing us pain, and to begin to develop a plan to overcome that behavior. That is my responsibility. Lastly, number 9 is positively. Stoic Life Coaching is not positive thinking. Okay, I want to throw that out. Life coaching would have us walk around like Ned Flanders and smiling all the time and putting on a happy face. And even though, you know, the world is falling apart and oakley doakley like sort of mentality. And I want to bust that mindset, because we are focusing on reality. Okay. And reality is the current things that I'm doing and my current patterns and behaviors. These are all grounded in reality. And then I'm going to help my client look at the facts, and that is the facts about where they are currently located in their life, the facts about what they really want inside of life, and the fact about whether they are going to commit to the process and do what it takes to begin to change. These are all facts, okay? This is not pie in the sky. This is not manifest your expectations and all of these different things. This is reality, okay? And the danger of focusing on all this positivity is like, oh, I'm just going to focus on these like neat little quotes and narratives so I can pretend that I am positive and not create any actions inside of my life. Now, having a form of mental positivity while neglecting to do anything that changes any area of your life is not going to be beneficial in any way or fashion, okay? So the dangers of positivity can be avoiding the negative things in life, trying to fake being happy, refusing to look at the inevitable situations of life. There is a lot of things in life that are going to cause us pain, and they are inevitable. They are going to take place whether we like it or not, okay? You are going to experience the death of a loved one. You are going to experience death yourself. Your body is one day most likely going to fall apart. All of these things are inevitable. I could try to lie to myself in this form of false positivity that will set me up for terrible disappointment of dashed expectations, okay? Next is fake affirmations that usually have the opposite effect. We'll probably do a whole lesson on this, but we can't lie to ourselves and expect that we're going to have results, okay? We need to begin to tell ourselves the truth and to affirm the stoic affirmations inside of our life that are grounded in reality and not in falsehood, okay? You can't say that you're the most smartest person on the planet and think that you are going to be convinced of such truth. Your mind knows better, okay? So we can't lie to ourselves. Sometimes we need to consider the worst case scenario to begin to be prepared for things. Now, that doesn't sound very positive. Next, we can often become detached from reality inside of this positive mindset movement. And lastly, it sets up the idea that we should be like somehow happy and in pleasure all the time. Number 10 is this: lifetime, a scope of work. Okay, stoic life coaching is not a lifetime scenario. Now, some of these therapies you can go into for a prolonged period of time. It is a lifetime of self-discovery where they honestly, in my opinion, create a crippled and dependent upon that system and that process and set you up to need them forever. Okay. And so stoic life coaching is a short period of time where a person needs to overcome their challenges and where they get a coach to help them bust through those situations. So there is a scope of work, there is a beginning, and there is an end. And the ultimate goal is to create habits that produce success. Now, there are a lot of modalities out there that keep you stuck and in a lifetime. And if they lose you, of course, they lose their money and they set up this codependent situation. And it almost creates this, you'll never stop paying. And the reality is because you'll never stop paying, that you'll never be classified as healed or able or healthy to continue on your own. So coaching has a scope. Stoic life coaching focuses more on short-term behaviors and or actions, objectives, and goals, and it deals with the core issues of purpose, identity, and real habit transformation. And this is the way to begin to get better results inside of life.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of The Stoic Entrepreneur. My heart's desire is to take stoic principles and begin to apply them into each area of life and begin to teach others how to do so also. Do me a favor, share this with somebody who would benefit highly from this content, and I will see you soon.